Before we begin today, we want to thank our newest patron, Catherine, and a special shout out to our patrons, Sarah, Chrissy, and Lauren, who upgraded their pledges. Thank you all so much for your support. Now, as you all know, Becca is reading Persuasion for the very first time in preparation for season 4, and we're going to be releasing her initial reactions on Patreon alongside each episode. That's going to be available at our $15 tier, so if that sounds interesting to you, head on over to patreon.com/podandprejudice to see how you can support us. And now, drumroll please, enjoy our season 3 finale.
I haven't seen you in a minute in person.
I know, this is so fun.
I know, and we also haven't recorded forever in person because we've been like having wonderful guests on, but when we do have guests on, listeners, we usually do record separately.
Yeah, we love our guests, but we miss hanging out.
Yes, we have so many good plans for after this for the classic Molly Becca vegan Chinese food situation.
Yeah, we can't wait. We have to decide what we're watching, by the way.
Oh, we'll have to get into it. Yeah. I found out Mike has never read or seen The Great Gatsby recently, and I don't understand.
Like the new one?
Or... No, like any Gatsby ever.
And just, you know, I would judge him, but I had never read Pride and Prejudice.
That's true.
So.
Like, the point of this whole podcast is to not judge people for having not read the classics.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, this is Becca.
This is Molly.
We are here to talk about Jane Austen.
Oh my God, we're not. We're talking a little bit about Jane Austen, but we're mostly talking about ourselves.
Yes. Guys, we have wrapped our Emma content. It took us 2 years to cover everything about that beautiful, spoiled princess, Emma Woodhouse. And here we are on the other side of it, getting ready to start afresh with a new book. Before we do that, though, we thought we'd give you a little treat and answer a few listener questions.
Yeah, so this is our tried and true season finale Q&A. And by tried and true, I mean I think we've done it one time before. And we're very excited to do it again because since the last time, our audience has obviously grown and we got so many questions from you all that we aren't going to be able to answer all of them, but we're going to do our best to answer most of them. Some of them are duplicates, so if you don't hear your question, don't take it personally. We probably combined it with something else, but we're so excited to get into it.
So Molly's broken these questions down into sections, so we're going to go, I guess, kind of through each section and answer each question.
Yeah.
Now, are we going to attempt to say people's handles?
Yeah. Most of these came from Instagram. Some of them came from our Patreon Discord, but for the most part, you sent in your questions via Instagram. So I did include your Instagram handles, and I'm sorry if we
We're gonna butcher a couple of them. Some of you may not know how your own Instagram handles are supposed to be pronounced.
Yeah.
But apologies in advance.
Yes. So we're going to start with some questions about Emma, since this is wrapping up our season covering Emma.
So last time, Emma!
Emma!
Questions.
Oh, wait, we're going to talk about Emma questions. That's so cute. So do you want to kick us off?
Sure. So Mystic Pixie asks, do you wish you could continue Emma content, or are you ready to move on to the next novel?
We're ready.
I think we're ready. I mean, don't get us wrong. I love Emma, and I actually have been really enjoying, like, diving deep into Emma, and I kind of think it's a masterpiece now as a book.
Oh, 100%.
But it's been 2 years of covering Emma Woodhouse and her rich-ass life. I think we're ready for some new conflict, for some new discoveries. And I don't want to get too ahead of ourselves here, but I think Persuasion's going to be fun.
Yeah, I'm really excited for Persuasion, and I think you all are ready for us to move on as well.
Really quick side note. Someone, I don't know, remember who, asked us what book we were doing next. Persuasion.
Yes. So Rolug96, who is a patron of ours, and so was Mystic Pixie, asked our favorite scene in Emma, aside from the proposal, because the proposal is obviously the best.
Okay, so this is a really good question. There's a lot to choose from, and the question is, are we doing book or adaptation?
I think book.
Okay.
Like, in general.
I think the great humbling of Emma Woodhouse sequence is pretty iconic, but I'm going to go with what my answer was when we were reading the book, the I am fatigued moment with Jane Fairfax.
Because, do love that moment.
Yeah, because, like, you just feel for Jane. She's, like, this quasi-villain the whole book, like, kind of, like, in the distance, making Emma uncomfortable. And this moment of, like, true humanity, like, pops out of her inadvertently, and it just tells you how much more she has going on. It's so, I feel for Jane Fairfax.
Yeah, that's a good one. I think I'm going to go with the almost hand kiss. Because that was like, that moment is like slutty. Like, I remember reading that and like having to put my book down and like fan myself off.
Yeah, I mean, it's we read it like 8 times when we read that chapter, and that scene is so hot for what it doesn't say.
Exactly.
So good. All right. Christian Day wants to know, we all know Emma and Knightley are Luke and Lorelai, but which Gilmore Girls character is Miss Bates?
I have one.
I have one, too, and I want to see if we have the
Should
same
one. Should
we
say it on 3, 2, 1?
No, because I don't remember her full name.
Oh, okay. Then we definitely have different ones. Oh, I know who you're going to say. Oh, wait. Maybe I'm wrong. My first instinct with this is Kirk.
Kirk is a great pick.
Because he is beloved by the community, but kind of a doofus.
Mm-hmm.
And talks, and you just like have no idea what he's saying.
I mean, that's a pretty good one, honestly. Mine was gonna be the lady, what's her name,
the one played by Sally Struthers.
Yeah, blonde,
yeah,
100%. Hair,
yeah,
yeah.
Babette,
yeah, because she's loud and maternal and sort of in everyone's business, but in a kind, talkative way.
Oh my gosh, wait, if Babette is Miss Bates, then Maury is Mrs. Bates.
Exactly. Who would that make Kirk then?
Kirk?
I feel like he might be Mr. Woodhouse.
Oh, I was going to say he could theoretically be... because this is like really shady to Kirk, but Mr. Elton, like Kirk has his moment of asking Lorelai out. Do you remember that?
Vaguely.
Yeah, but he's not malicious in the same way, so I don't want to do him dirty like that. So yeah, he can be Mr. Woodhouse.
I mean, I said that because he's like a slight hypochondriac, odd figure who loves everyone and is beloved and is particularly taken care of by Luke, aka Mr. Knightley.
Yes, that is true. I would also, like, just in terms of like hierarchy, in terms of the hierarchy of the town, Mr. Gilmore, Richard Gilmore, could classify as a Mr. Woodhouse. And I personally am a Richard Gilmore stan. So I am okay with giving that title to him.
Quite honestly, Richard Gilmore, love the character. May he rest in peace. More of a Mr. Bennett, but
yes.
I digress. But
yes, we digress because we have so many questions to get to. So we're not going to do an entire fan casting of Gilmore Girls.
Yeah, but I think both of us answered correctly. I think the runner-up in my brain was also Taylor.
Taylor Dosey.
Yeah.
Yes.
But basically, there's a lot of really chatty townsfolk in Stars Hollow that could all be Miss Bates. So maybe the answer is all three are Miss Bates in different ways.
Yes. So Mancita asks, which was our favorite Emma adaptation and why?
I mean, it's got to be the one with Romola Garai and Johnny Lee Miller, I think, just because not only is it the most faithful adaptation, which we love, and not only is it one of the only ones that does the Jane and Frank story justice, I think, honestly, Romola Garai's Emma is the only Emma I've seen on screen to truly capture why I adore the character.
Yeah.
With the exception of if we're counting Clueless.
I mean, of course we're counting Clueless. I think we can count everything that we've covered.
Ooh, then Clueless might be close on its heels.
I am going to go with Romola Garai's adaptation over Clueless. As much as I do love Clueless and I think it's a great movie, I think that Romola Garai's Emma is so perfect, and Clueless just got with a step sibling thing. It just got like, they fell short in just one way that's just too big.
Yeah, I think for me, it's just like the vibes of Clueless,
yes,
are
Clueless,
so impeccable.
Immaculate vibes, yeah.
And I think Alicia Silverstone's performance is singular in like pop culture history.
Yes.
To an extent, like the movie is so smart that it's difficult to count it out of the equation entirely. But
oh, totally. I think that Romola Garai and Alicia Silverstone are the two most perfect Emmas / Cher Horowitzes that ever were. And like thinking about like adaptation as a whole, I like the Romola Garai one better.
Yeah.
For being an adaptation of Emma, but Clueless is great.
K Harp Ditmar, who is also a patron, asks, please assign a Girl Scout cookie to each Emma character.
Ooh.
I've been thinking about this one all day.
Oh my God, amazing.
Okay. So, first of all, I want to say I know for some of our patrons in different parts of the country, I want to acknowledge that certain cookies are named differently.
Yes.
So, that caveat out.
Also, they've changed names of cookies, and I'm going to continue to use the ones that I know.
So I think let's start with Knightley as a Thin Mint.
Because Thin Mints are perfect and Knightley is perfect.
No, they're not the most perfect Girl Scout cookie. They're delicious, and they're crisp and curt and to the point, and they don't need a lot of fuss to make them delicious. I think Emma's a Samoa, which if they are not named that in your part of the country, I think they're the ones with the chocolate on the bottom, the cookie and the caramel and the coconut.
So those are my personal favorite Girl Scout cookie. And I'm not sure that I would give it to Emma.
Hear me out?
Yes.
Extra.
Definitely extra.
She's beautiful. She's rich. She's got everything going on at once. Almost too much, but just enough at the same time.
All right. I buy into it. I don't know who I was going to give it to, but I think you're right about that. Trefoils for Harriet.
Yes. Standard, sturdy, pretty.
Pretty, but like not enough going on.
I'm going to give Tagalongs or the peanut butter chocolate ones to Jane Fairfax.
Yeah, basic.
Basic, but perfect bite.
Yeah.
And then I think Do-si-dos.
Which one's that?
No, not Do-si-dos. The All Abouts that used to be around. The ones that are chocolate on the bottom and like shortbread on the top.
Yeah. Oh, I loved those.
Oh, I was going to say definitely Frank Churchill because they are a little, they like look really good on the package, but they're a little like when you eat them.
Okay. See, those are like a really nostalgic fave for me because like a little bit of chocolate gets on your fingers when you're eating them. Mm-hmm. But I can see that being for Frank Churchill, especially because like what's hiding underneath isn't what it's presenting as on the front. Like on the surface.
Mm-hmm.
I want to give the lemon drops to Mr. Woodhouse.
Oh, yeah, that's a perfect one. That health.
Health. So that brings us to our dream casting section. This one I'm really excited about because my girlfriend, so obviously I'm excited about, but also because I've been thinking about it for like 2 days. Mel Rubin 2 asks, Clueless remake in 2024. Cast the main characters.
Okay, Molly has already cast two people, and I'm not opposed to either one. She has Cher Horowitz being played by Renee Rapp, and the only reason to discount that at all, and I won't discount it, is that she's already played an iconic mean girl.
But hear me out, because I thought about that, and I was like, she only plays mean girls. Like, I don't want to like, you know, but Cher is not a mean girl.
Not my issue, actually.
Okay.
So. Renee, first of all, Leighton Meester is the name of the actor, but Leighton on Sex Lives of College Girls, not that mean. Little mean, but like in a fun way, but she's great character. But the thing is that like Rachel McAdams is like iconic as Regina George. Renee Rapp comes in, you know, puts her own spin on the character and remains iconic. Alicia Silverstone is iconic as Cher Horowitz, a different it girl. And you wouldn't want Alicia Silverstone to have played both Regina George and Cher Horowitz.
That's true.
That's my only pushback on Renee Rapp, who is otherwise great casting.
Listen, I will say that I agonized over this, and I tried to figure out who else it could be. I Googled my work computer search history is just Gen Z actors because I was like, I don't know any of their names. I was thinking maybe like Lana Condor could be good because she's got that like very sweet face, but I feel like she could play mean if she was asked.
You know what?
To.
She was actually my cast for Dion.
Oh, okay. Well, good. Yep. Then
and
she can still be in it.
Ayo Edebiri.
Yes.
As Ty inspired. I thought about it and I was like, oh, yeah.
I will say that Mel, when asking this question, did like have that in her mind. So I kind of stole it and I'll give her credit, but like I just think it's so perfect.
I think Renee Rapp is a smart pick because Cher's pretty and like popular girl, but she's such a smart version of that. And you could cast like a Kaya Gerber who's very talented or a Sydney Sweeney who's very engaging.
Oh, Sydney Sweeney, that's good.
But I feel like Sydney Sweeney is not a Cher. There's like a bite to Cher that's fun and bubbly. And Sydney Sweeney plays an incredible darkness or meanness.
Mm-hmm.
And like that's what makes her so good on Euphoria as Cassie. She's like very dark,
mm-hmm.
Underneath a bubbly layer of sweetness.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I feel like Cher's got to go the opposite. She's got a lot of bite, but got to have a lot of heart underneath.
Yeah, which is why Renee Rapp, I think, could do a really good job with it. And if we wanted to turn it into a musical, then great. And Ayo Edebiri, if you've seen Bottoms, like that character
is Ty.
Is Ty. So,
Who are we casting as our Paul Rudd?
Oh my God, I didn't even think about him. Let's see. Okay, so again, thinking about like what Gen Z actors I know the cast of Heartstopper, and I feel like Kit Connor could be really good.
I was going to say Jordan Fisher.
Oh, isn't he like on Broadway?
Yeah, he played Anthony in Sweeney Todd. Now he's Orpheus in Hadestown.
Yeah, no, he's perfect.
He also was Evan Hansen at some point.
Yeah,
as well.
That's what I was thinking of him as Evan Hansen, but like his IMDb picture is so hot. So I can see that like he could
he's
have
got,
that like.
He's exuding sweet competence, which is what I'd want in a Josh.
Yeah.
Who's Christian? It'd be funny in 2024 to cast someone who like is really not hiding their queerness.
Mm-hmm. I mean, this would be a good moment to bring in like, what's his face?
I don't know. What is his face? The guy from Red, White, and Royal Blue?
No, I was gonna say Joe Locke, but I am just looking at the cast of Heartstopper now.
I'm pulling from like Euphoria and Bottoms and just like general pop culture.
I don't love the guy from Bottoms/Red, White, and Royal Blue for this role, but I do love Kit Connor for it.
I'm into it.
And I think that. Or Joe Locke. Joe Locke is giving, like, he's not giving, like, stud muffin the way that Christian in the original Clueless is, but I think he's exactly the kind of person that Cher Horowitz would, like, latch on to and
he's
be like.
He's studly. He's cute.
Yeah. I mean, and Kit Connor is obviously a stud. So I think either of them could really do it.
Mm-hmm.
I think actually any of the boys in the cast of Heartstopper could do
it. Looking at Kit Connor, though, that's, like, very Christian energy.
Yes.
Because, like, that's the guy, the girl, like popular girl at school is going to be like, my boy. And he's going to be like, but my boys.
Yes. Okay. So here's our cast of the main five. We have Cher, played by Renee Rapp. Ty, played by Ayo Edebiri. Dion, played by Lana Condor. Josh, played by Jordan Fisher. And Christian, played by Kit Connor.
And last thing I'll do, Miss Geist, Molly Shannon.
Perfect.
Mr. Hall. Gonna give it to Danny DeVito.
Oh my.
And Mr. Horowitz. Loud funny man.
What if it was like Steve Carell or something?
Steve Carell. Good stuff. Let's do it. All
okay,
right.
Great.
That's our cast.
Yes. We also got Pride and Prejudice from Caledonia and Sense and Sensibility from Maya Molly too. So let's do like a couple characters from each for time's sake.
Okay, let's do our main couples, maybe.
Yeah.
So for Darcy, you know, for years I said Idris Elba in this part, but he's getting a little up there.
Yeah, I think he's a little too old now. Yeah. Sorry, Idris. Brett Goldstein.
Yes.
I think we've talked about this before when we've done, like, the witch
Ted Lasso
characters.
Yes.
Yeah, Brett Goldstein for sure as Mr. Darcy.
Yes, and then I'd put... immediately who jumped to mind, she's not like super well known, but Antonia Thomas. She was on Misfits and Lovesick.
Oh, yeah. No, she'd be perfect.
Yeah.
From the one episode of Lovesick that I saw, she's also on The Good Doctor.
She's so good. She's so cool. So let's just go with Antonia Thomas for Lizzie.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get someone in there with like a little less name recognition.
Mm-hmm.
For Jane, we're going Alexandra Daddario from White Lotus.
Oh, yeah.
Perfect.
Oh, she's great. Yeah. Perfect. Oh my God, wait, is she in horror movies too? Or does she just look like someone who's in horror movies?
I have no idea.
Oh, she's in Percy Jackson and the Olympians.
Yes, but don't judge her acting from that. She was really good in White Lotus.
Yeah, and that was also in 2010, so
yeah.
I won't judge her.
And then...
that movie sucks.
Who's our Bingley boy?
Oh.
Simu Liu!
Yeah!
Yes, exactly. That's
Ripped, but like... angel face.
Like heart of gold, bro. That's what you need for Bingley, and that's what he is. All right, let's do really rapid fire Sense and Sensibility. Idris Elba is Brandon, maybe?
Sure, yeah, that works.
Yeah.
He's, you know, I'm not gonna call him old, but
no, he's not old, but he's old, too old to be Mr. Darcy, but definitely not too old to play Brandon.
Yes. I'm going back to famous actresses under 30.
You know, I said her name before, but Sydney Sweeney is Marianne. She plays really unstable quite well.
Okay, great.
Or you know what? Actually, I changed my mind. Florence Pugh.
Who I learned is younger than me recently.
We will all live.
Yes. Florence Pugh as... Well, the thing is that Florence Pugh has already played Joe. Not Joe.
Amy.
Amy? Amy. My bad. And that's, I feel like, a very similar...
You know, I didn't say her at the time, but Saoirse Ronan would also be a great Lizzie.
She would.
Not to go back on that, but yeah, I actually... Saoirse Ronan. Saoirse Ronan for sure.
Wait. Can Eleanor be Daisy Ridley?
Yes.
Yay.
Perfect. And that leaves just Eddie, our boy Eddie.
Ooh. I have the image of this man in my head.
What's he in?
It's more of an aesthetic thing. I mean, I'm not picturing a man who's already played him. I'm like picturing who I want to play him.
I'm going to say Timothy Chalamet as Willoughby.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Dev Patel. Wait, no. This is it. This is who I want. Sorry. It's Alfie Enoch.
Alfie Enoch. Great pick.
That's who I was picturing. I knew I had in my brain somewhere. Yeah, he would be perfect because he's like, I mean, all right, granted, I know him only from Harry Potter, but he's so cute.
I watched him in How to Get Away with Murder, and he is very sweet and very hot and a little incompetent on that show. So
perfect for Eddie.
Yeah.
Great. Okay, so we've landed on Alfie Enoch for Eddie.
All right. That brings us to General Austin Questions. Chaos and Curse Words, one of our patrons, asks, what's your elevator pitch on why someone should read Austin?
Well, my elevator pitch as someone who's new to Austin is I would just say she's funny, she's relatable, and reading something that's 200 years old that's still relatable today, I don't know, makes you feel like everything's okay. Everything's going to be okay. It was okay then, yep. It's going to be okay now.
Yeah, I think also, I mean, like, why should anyone read classics is like a grander question. They form a lot of the basis of like the stories we know today. They're brilliant. That's why they're timeless. In Jane Austen in particular is classics that she had a lot of heart in her writing without sacrificing an ounce of intelligence and wit. And the combo is that she's a comforting writer to read. If you are interested in reading books that challenge you and simultaneously relax you, I feel like these books are that. They're a very interesting and fun world to inhabit from this point of view, but you can also learn a lot about class in England, and you can laugh and feel for the characters. So, like, there's a lot of reasons to read it. I think the reason I'm struggling to come up with, like, one reason to read it is because it's, like, Jane Austen. Like, she formed the rom-com. If you're someone who likes rom-coms, that's the OG. Yeah. If you're someone who likes fantasy, Lord of the Rings is the OG. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Totally.
All this caveated with the fact that obviously that's a very Western-centric canon and there's a lot of different books globally and stories globally we should be incorporating better into our curriculum and into our hearts and souls. But Jane Austen still has a lot to offer just for everyone, I think.
Yeah. So one of our patrons, Sarah Purple People Eater, and some other folks, including Elizabeth Hamill, ask us to rank the novels we've read so far.
I mean, you go first. I feel like people kind of know my rankings.
Yeah. I think I've liked each one more than the next. So starting with Emma, Sense and Sensibility, Pride and Prejudice.
That's really interesting because mine is... probably Sense and Sensibility, Emma, Pride and Prejudice. All of them are fantastic, but it is rare to have two fans of Jane Austen both rank Pride and Prejudice last. Although I think it'll be interesting as the books go on because now we're going into like the slightly less popular ones, how people feel.
Yeah, I mean, I loved Pride and Prejudice, but because it was the first one that I read, I was still getting used to the language and didn't really like catch a lot of things. So I'm able to enjoy them more as we go.
I'll say this. I think Pride and Prejudice is the most artfully plotted of the three.
Mm-hmm.
I think Emma's the funniest. I think Sense and Sensibility has the most heart in the characters.
Totally.
And that's how I'd classify the three.
Yeah. So our patron, Mari Montero 19, asks us to rank the adaptations we've seen so far. We'll just do like the top three.
So I'm going to do Sense and Sensibility, 1995 or 96, the Emma Thompson one. I'm going to probably do, might have to be the Romola Garai Emma. And then I'm torn. It's a tie between Clueless and the Lizzie Bennet Diaries for me.
Hmm. I am going to do... I don't know if I can put this in like any particular order, but as they come to my mind, The Romola Garai Emma, 1995 Pride and Prejudice. And I think like, I mean, so like as an adaptation, The Lizzie Bennet Diaries I liked the most out of all the adaptations we watched of Pride and Prejudice. But I think I'm going to put the 2005 Pride and Prejudice on my top three list because it's such a comfort movie.
I can respect that. And I mean, obviously, we didn't do honorable mentions for like incredible adaptations. Emma Approved, Emma 2020, the 2008 Sense and Sensibility didn't make it onto our list. Those are all incredible. And obviously, all the authors we've had on as well.
Yeah, we love most of the adaptations that we've reviewed. There's like one.
I think we can both agree the 95 Emmas can choke.
The
Kate Beckinsale.
Kate Beckinsale, 1996. Yeah.
Gwyneth.
Yeah. Oh, the 1990. Oh, and yes, Gwyneth. Yeah.
Yeah.
Gwyneth was like serviceable.
I feel the exact opposite. I feel like Gwyneth's unwatchable and Kate is serviceable.
You know, they're both not great.
Yeah. There's better adaptations of the story.
Yes.
Okay. Ava Gonzalez 9 asks, favorite couple out of all three books? This is a great question. And the answer for me is clearly Emma Knightley.
Emma Knightley.
Yeah. Maybe it's not just because we just read the book. I know Lizzie and Darcy are more classic, but Emma Knightley's story,
the way it ends.
If I Loved You Less, I might be able to talk about it more.
Yeah.
Moving into Hartfield for her father. Iconic. Dreamboat behavior.
We love him. Morgana Pettit asks, fanfic question, what couple would we mix up? For example, Jane and Colonel Brandon.
I mean, are we going gay on this question? Because
absolutely.
I mean, Emma Woodhouse and Jane Fairfax.
Obviously.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, do Knightley and Frank get together? Because I don't think they do.
No.
I think Knightley stays single and Frank fucks around.
Yeah, Frank and Wickham could get together. Oh, we talked about this. Wickham and Willoughby. At our live show, Wickham and Willoughby getting together, you know, because they both can fuck off.
100%. Okay. Oi, voy, voy, 787 asks, dreamiest leading man so far and best villain? Knightley.
Knightley.
And I think best villain still has to go to, like, Lucy Steele.
Yeah, I like Lucy Steele. I also like Mrs. Elton, but she's not a villain. We've discussed this. She's just annoying, but she's like so fun to hate.
Augusta.
Yeah, we love to hate her. We love to hate Lucy Steele. And Lucy Steele also just like good for her. So.
And yeah, Lucy Steele is a villain we can all root for.
Yeah. Princess of the World 85 asks what Daddy Bennet looks like now and who our favorite Austin parent is.
Do you want to take the second one and then the first one?
Yeah, let's talk about our favorite Austin parents, Mr. Woodhouse.
I feel like they're all flawed. Mr. Woodhouse is the most entertaining. I feel like objectively, our girly Mrs. Dashwood is probably the best parent.
Oh, for who's a good parent? Absolutely. For who is the most fun to read?
Definitely Mr. Woodhouse.
Yeah.
I'll also give an honorable mention to Daddy Bennet, only solely for his relationship with Lizzie. He's pretty bad to all of his other daughters.
And then what Daddy Bennet looks like now, like if I have a casting for him besides Zachary Quinto or Colin Firth, there have been so many kind of hot dads in these adaptations that we've watched, like
Zaddies,
all of the Mr. Westons.
They're all so hot. This is maybe the hottest take on our podcast.
You know, I think he's still got to be, like, an adult Colin Firth.
An adult Colin Firth as opposed to what other Colin Firth?
Like, he's like Colin Firth, but salt and pepper, the way that, yeah. I don't know if my image of Daddy Bennet has changed. So, I don't know if it's fair to answer the question because it's the same answer. What do you think?
I think that's fine. The people should know that you're still stubbornly on Colin Firth.
All right, so I'm still stubbornly on Colin Firth for Daddy Bennet. He's getting older and it's making more sense and why not?
Yeah, why wouldn't Lizzie marry her father?
The only problem with Colin Firth playing Mr. Bennet is that he's like, he plays that kind of like so well. You know, he's like, I like you very much, just the way you are.
Oh,
Bridget Jones also gets an honorable mention.
Yeah,
me,
Bridget.
Right,
we don't talk enough about Bridget. It's because it's a very loose adaptation.
Yes, very, very loose. But I think that, like, acting wise, that's not his character type. It's just that he's like a hot older British man.
I mean, he can do anything. He's great in Kingsman.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. You're right. So that's my answer to that.
Janae actually asks, who's your fave heroine so far? I think it's Claire.
Is it?
I think it's Claire.
Do you think it's Emma?
No.
Do you think it's...
For me, it's Elizabeth Bennet. I know I said it's number three in the books,
yeah, yeah,
but...
Yeah, yeah, no, she's definitely, like, the coolest.
She's not like other girls.
She's not like other girls. I have a soft spot in my heart for Marianne.
I love Marianne. She's great, but I think for me, Marianne just has to grow so much in the novel that I don't know if she can take the top spot. And Lizzie's just so sharp. And she does grow, don't get me wrong. But, like, her snappy wit is so forming. And, like, the fact that Sense and Sensibility revolves around two women, like, they have to share the spotlight so much.
Yes.
But I agree. Marianne's an incredible character. I love all of our ladies so far. They're incredible.
Yeah. Austin Wright's a great lady.
They go through so much, except Emma, who only goes through the consequences of her own actions.
Which is important to write in a story as well.
Yeah.
Nusco Graphics asks, if you could put any actor in a slutty wet Mr. Darcy shirt, who would you choose?
Okay, here's the thing. Without giving too much away about Bridgerton, I was reminded recently that Jonathan Bailey has a wet shirt angst white cotton moment in that season. And it is incredible. He's another great Darcy cast, but he basically plays a Jane Austen hero in
actually,
that season.
A lot of the Bridgerton cast could be good. I've only seen season one.
Season two is better, in my opinion. I know that's a hot take. We haven't talked about it much on the pod, but season one has its problems. I think not insignificant. Season two, I think, is subtler on the sort of gratuitous sex scenes, and the desire and the chemistry is so intense. And Jonathan Bailey is so hot. He is so hot. But pretty much any... Ooh, Michael Fassbender, yet another actor I would just, like, rain on.
I agree with all of these.
Yes.
Yeah. A Study of Nonsense asks, what would an ideal Sense and Sensibility a la Emma Approved / Lizzie Bennet Diaries look like? I love this question.
I've thought about this question so hard since I looked at these questions.
Let's hear it.
Okay. If it's a vlog style still, I think it's Long Distance Sisters. Vlogging to each other back and forth.
Ooh, that's fun.
Yeah. So you have Eleanor in one place, Marianne in another. They've been separated since having to leave Norland, and they have gone to different areas of the world. And the drama that's happening with Willoughby is happening. Like, it's happening in a way that, like, we see it happening, and she keeps making vlogs with this guy, and Eleanor's getting concerned from afar about it. Mm. And then we don't see what's happening with Edward and Eleanor for a good chunk of it because those videos are not making their way to Marianne.
But then Marianne's like, my audience wants to, like, hear about what's happening with you. Can you make them a video?
Yeah. And she's making videos about, like, anything but Edward.
Amazing. I love that. I love this next question.
Lay it on me.
Stitches and Seeds asks, which of Jane's Janes is the best Jane?
I mean, Jane Austen's the best Jane, right?
Yeah, Jane Austen's the best Jane. But you know what? Like, I would have said Jane Bennet while reading the books. Like, I like Jane Bennet better than Jane Fairfax. I thought that Jane Fairfax sucked so bad when I was reading the book. I mean, I didn't think she sucked. I was just like, what? The Rama Ligarai Emma adaptation, the Jane in that is so lovable that it, like, kind of shifted my whole perspective on Jane. I kind of love her now.
Yeah, I still think I love Jane Bennet, but only by a hair more. I think Jane Fairfax's story is actually more interesting by a lot than Jane Bennet's.
Yeah.
But Jane through the eyes of her loving sister, ugh.
Yes.
Hits the heart.
Really sweet.
Yeah. Okay. Hadia de Messine asks, to Molly, how has your understanding of Jane Austen's craft changed during this show?
I mean, I have gotten a lot better at reading these books, I would say. I'm able to pick up on a lot more things. I'm able to think a little bit more critically about it. I remember, like, early on in the show, we got some, like, negative reviews that were like, this is a Jane Austen podcast. Why don't they know anything about Jane Austen? Like, that's the point. But now I feel like I know a little bit about Jane Austen. Like, I have some background, so we're able to have more intelligent conversations.
Yeah, I mean, the only bummer for me is that you were so off in your, like, first few predictions that it was delightful. Now you're pretty on point with, like, picking up on what Jane's laying down.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm really proud of you. You've really, like, understood her voice
at
this point. So it makes for a great time showing the books to you.
Thanks.
All right. Next category, we've got Wed, Bed, Dead.
Yeah, one of our followers, instead of saying fuck, marry, kill, said Wed, Bed, Dead, and I thought that was amazing.
Yes, it's perfect. Do we want to go villains or heroes first?
Heroes.
All right, so Wed, Bed, Dead from Janae, Knightley, Darcy, and Colonel Brandon.
I feel like I'm choosing between my babies.
This one's hard.
Really hard. I am going to wed Darcy, bed Knightley, and dead Colonel Brandon.
That was unexpected from my perspective.
What are you going to do?
I'm wedding Knightley. I might also dead Colonel. I love him, and it breaks my heart to say it, but he's so sad. And I'm also really not his type, if I'm being honest. I don't have enough joie de vivre.
I don't know, that really tickled me.
I don't have enough joie de vivre.
Yeah.
Well, so maybe he's not dead. Maybe I'm just the Eleanor.
So you're betting Knightley? I mean, you're betting Darcy?
Of course I'm betting Mr. Darcy.
See, the only reason I wedded Darcy and betted Knightley is because I feel like Knightley... Oh, you know what? Maybe if we're going by the book standard, maybe Knightley is not hotter than Darcy. But I feel like all the adaptations, Knightley's been really hot.
I mean, yes. And also all the adaptations, Darcy has been really hot, too.
That's true.
And Brandon is hot in the adaptations as well because it's Hollywood or BBC in some cases.
Well, thinking purely about the book, I guess I could see it from your perspective, especially like if I'm living the life of the person in the books, like if I'm friends to loversing with Knightley, then yeah, I want to marry him.
Yeah, like I feel like if we're talking about companions, first of all, I take it for granted that if you wed someone, you're having sex with them multiple times.
Yes, yes.
So I get to have multiple rounds of sex with Mr. Knightley. And with Mr. Darcy, I feel like, I don't know, I feel like we're going to argue our way through it. It's going to be great.
Yeah, so the reason I initially said wed Mr. Darcy is because I feel like he is like a very stable person and he would take really good care of me.
I think that's fair. I also think Knightley's a pretty sturdy person as well. They're all three sturdy.
Listen, they're all sturdy. I want to marry them all.
Yes. I mean, listen, it's impossible choice. Terrible question.
Yes.
I think the next one's very easy, though. Contecrit, mm-hmm. Wed, Bed, Dead, Wickham, Willoughby, and Weston, a.k.a. Frank Churchill.
Okay.
I'm marrying Frank.
I'm also going to marry Frank. I'm going to bed Willoughby, and I'm going to dead Wickham.
That's exactly correct. Because yeah. Willoughby, you don't want him around for more than one night, but he's going to be passionate.
Yeah.
Churchill is not an evil human being. He's just flawed. So
yeah, but he would definitely be a simp once you're married. Like,
exactly. Like, I feel like once, like, things are sorted out, he'll be fine.
Yeah.
And Wickham can just go suck a large one.
Yeah. So that brings us to our next round of questions, which are all about season 4 of this podcast. Our first question comes from a couple different people, Roluke96 and Savoy Cat88. What is your wildest prediction as to what Persuasion is about? And also our hopes and fears.
I feel like I should decline to answer this one.
Yes, this is a question for me. Persuasion, what do I think it's about? I'll tell you what I know about Persuasion. And this will all go into our first episode of season 4 as well. But I know that there's an adaptation in 2020 or so that had, oh, I forget her name, probably for the best. there was like a little sexy time in the preview for it. I think people think of it as sexy. So I don't know. Let me make a prediction. Okay, characters. I think Anne Elliot is in Persuasion. Becca will neither confirm nor deny. I think Captain Moreland is in Persuasion. So those are the two people that I've heard of. Captain Moreland? Is that right? Norland Park, Captain Moreland? Did I make up this person?
I will neither confirm nor deny.
Cool. All right. So I hope that what I'm saying is, well, actually, I don't care either way. If it's right or wrong. But
it's better if you're wrong.
It's probably better for the show if I'm wrong. So Captain Moreland is in the army and he comes to a small town by the sea where Anne Elliot lives, writing letters in her cabin estate. And she wears glasses, spectacles, and buns and plaid skirts, and she's kind of nerdy. And he starts courting her, and he has to persuade her to fall in love with him.
It's in the title. It's in the title. Okay.
So that's my prediction, hopes and fears. I hope that it is as steamy as I am imagining that it is. Fears, I'm not really afraid of anything, except I know it's shorter. So, like, I hope that we're able to, you know, sink our teeth in. I mean, I have faith in us. So, yeah.
Okay. I'm not going to answer any of that because I am partway through that book. Not as far into it as I should be at this point, but I will get farther.
Yeah.
Mary Montero, 19, and Phoebe O'Murtagh both kind of ask about what our format's going to be for the next one. Mary asks about whether or not I'm going to still be doing study questions, and Phoebe asks about whether or not we're going to have guests on to lead the discussion. The answer is it's going to be very similar to our usual format in that I will have finished Persuasion by the time Molly starts this book. I will have processed it. I will probably watch an adaptation or two. And the idea is that instead of us changing the format, I'm just preparing to do our format again with a new book. And this is fun if you want to be a patron with us. One thing we're planning to release as we drop these episodes are my little recorded random barfed thoughts about the book as I'm reading it. So you'll get my first impressions in that format if you're a patron, and you can hear what I'm thinking as I read through the book for the first time.
Yeah, and if you're a patron as well at the $15 tier, you will be able to submit study questions for each episode. So that's not new, but it's new for a book. And we're really excited about that because, especially since this is Becca's first time reading the book, so you guys might be able to, like, give us some more insight with your study questions. But as always, no spoilers.
Absolutely.
So Hadia Demasine asks Becca how it's been reading a new work by Jane Austen.
It's been really cool. For a lot of reasons, I'm not going to give away to Molly. It's a great book so far. I mean, it's not really a spoiler. And another thing I'll say, and I'll try to keep this as vague as I can, it's Austen writing about a different kind of story than I've read her from her before in a way that I find really interesting and tells me a lot about what she was thinking about later in her life. And also just, like, honestly, new tropes. Fun tropes. It's awesome. It's really good so far.
Cool. I can't wait. So now we have some questions just about us to round out season three. So Lady Laird asks, what is your favorite non-Austen content these days?
Ooh, books or movies or music?
Let's do a book, a movie, a music.
Okay. A book. Ooh, I mean, I'm reading Persuasion, and that's very Austen. I've been reading Holly Black's The Cruel Prince series because I'm on a bad fantasy kick. And it's not bad. It's actually a good book. And that has been refreshing because I've been reading some pretty bad fantasy books recently for fun. And this one's actually very engaging. So I've been enjoying that on the book reading front. TV shows / movie wise, I've been rewatching a lot of Buffy, as I've said a couple times on the show. And I just watched the Percy Jackson TV show and it was great.
Oh, I really want to watch it. I haven't seen it yet.
It's really good. It's really fun. It's not a beat for beat adaptation, but it totally captures the vibes of the first book. So I'm just overjoyed to have good adaptation work.
Nice.
And music wise, I made a New Year's resolution to myself. I was going to get back into music because I've kind of been not as great at forcing myself to, like, get off podcasts and audiobooks and, like, get back into something I really care about. So I've been, like, getting into, like, an album a month.
Ooh.
Like, and really diving into, like, the artist's intent. And I've been going, like, pure woman on it. So I started with The Good Witch by Maisie Peters. Then I went Snow Angel by Renee Rapp, the deluxe. Totally incredible album. And I've been doing Caroline Polachek's new album recently. I've forgotten the name of it, but it's incredible and insane. So yeah, that's what I've been up to.
Cool. Book-wise, I'm currently reading The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo and very much enjoying that.
That's a great book.
Yes, it is excellent. I will say it is hardcover and I like to read it in bed. So, and since I've also been going to bed lately, I've been listening to audiobooks while I get ready for bed. So it is going a lot slower than it would go if I just like sat down and read it. And I have the weekend to myself this weekend, so I'm probably going to finish it. But it is so good and very up my alley. So I'll just say that because I'm reading it right now. TV, I am watching Girls 5 Eva. And I am officially obsessed with it.
It looks so fun.
It's so good. Mel has already seen season one, so she's rewatching it with me. And then we're going to watch seasons two and three. That leads into music. I'm obsessed with Sarah Bareilles right now. Last year, I got really into her. And she was my number one listened to artist on Spotify, which was very surprising to me because I didn't intentionally get into her. I was just surrounded by people who love her. And now I do, too. So Sarah Bareilles, Renee Rapp. Obviously obsessed with her.
I've also been doing quite a bit of Annais Mitchell, who I just love.
I don't know as much by her, but I know Hadestown.
Yeah, she wrote Hadestown, but she's incredible poet. Ugh, love her.
Yeah. So that's that. Lady Laird also asks what our fave little treat is when we need a pick-me-up.
Food-wise or just like life-wise?
Whatever gives you a little pick-me-up.
Oh, man. Sushi. I love sushi.
For me, I like to make popcorn and have like a little hot chocolate with it.
Oh, that's so cute.
Yeah, popcorn and hot chocolate is like my comfort food when paired together.
My most comfort food, like the one I don't have very often, but like if I really want like a sweet to feel better, like I love chocolate chip cookies.
Yeah, a nice chocolate chip cookie.
It doesn't even have to be fancy, like Nestle Toll House baked in the oven for a few minutes. Ugh, perfect.
Yeah.
Chaos and Curse Words asks, when you aren't reading Austen, what would you say your normal reading for fun tastes run towards? This is like a crazy question for me to answer.
Yeah, this is going to be interesting.
So I keep at least two books in rotation at all times, a nonfiction and a fiction. My nonfiction tastes are heady and depressing. So I read a lot of memoirs. I recently read How to Say Babylon by Sophia Sinclair, and it is a truly spectacular memoir and very depressing. I mean, it's hopeful in certain ways, but like it's a very like gut-wrenching story of family and the pain of being a different person than your parents want you to be. And I also read a lot of philosophy books on that front as well. And also poli-sci history, policy books. I'm always keeping those in rotation.
The opposite of me.
Well, I do love reading good novels. Like, I love Britt Bennett. I love Immortalis. And I'm always on the hunt for really great novels. I love Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo. But I also love, like, dishy YA novels. Like, sometimes I really need to just read, like a fairy prince who's violent and cruel. Or, like, you know, like, your classic fantasy books. They, like, really bring me a lot of joy. They're not ideal, like, all the time. Some of them are fantastic. Some of them are not. But I swap off between reading really good fiction books and reading kind of, like, dishier guilty pleasure books. Although they're not guilty, I do enjoy reading, like, good fantasy novels and good YA novels. I think they get a bad rap because, you know, women like them and women wrote them a lot of the time.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I have very wide taste, as you can see. But I usually read the nonfiction through audiobook and I usually read the novels by print.
So I am similar in that I like to keep a couple books on rotation. I do not do any nonfiction. The occasional memoir or like autobiography, but that's like pretty rare. It's not really my thing. I love rom-coms. I love queer rom-coms, romance books, yum, 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 eat it up. But I also really like a murder mystery and like kind of those action-y books and fantasy as well. But I'm not so much into like the super high fantasy, like those really big books with really intricate covers. Like, I'm not super into those at the moment. But I do love most books. I love to read. I'm looking at my bookshelf trying to like gauge what the what my favorites are and what genres they're in. And like the Broken Earth series is high fantasy slash sci-fi. And I love that series. Like that is one of the best series I've ever read. I loved One of Us is Lying, which is like a kind of mid-range YA murder mystery. I thought it was so good. But most of them are rom-coms.
Yeah. So I think between the two of us, we have the whole library covered.
Absolutely.
But we do have some overlap in the books we like to read. I think we both like certain novels quite a bit. And like, I think our tastes really converge on T.J. Klune.
Yeah. I was just going to say, I'm reading T.J. Klune's new book right now. And I tend to, so I have like a physical book, which is usually something a little bit more brain involving. Like I'm reading Evelyn Hugo physically. I like to get my dishy, like, really smutty romance books audiobook wise because I just like I like to turn that sort of thing on when I'm like doing dishes or like cooking and like really just turn my brain off. That's like my zen zone.
Well, that's what I like I like to think deeply. That's why I like the nonfictions, but I do think that some fiction books lend themselves well to audiobooks. I think, for example, murder mysteries can be great audiobooks because they're very compelling.
See, I feel the opposite because for murder mysteries, I like to be able to go back and figure out what's happening. I'm like, okay, wait, I want to check when they last said that word and then like find the clues in the text. So we have different methods of reading.
Yes, we do. But I think a lot of overlap in books we like.
Absolutely.
All right. Next, we have Rolug 96, another one from Rolug. How have your lives changed since starting Emma?
Well, it's been 2 years.
Yeah, I mean, I've switched jobs twice, not for any bad reasons, just because, like, that's where life has taken me. And I got engaged.
Oh, yeah. You've had big changes.
And I got a dog.
Oh, my God. Okay. Well, what did I do? I moved in with my girlfriend. So that's, like, the biggest life change, I think, because we started Emma while I was dating Mel. So the biggest life change is moving in. Oh, and I was on a game show.
You were? And you became the stepmom to a dog.
I became the stepmom to a dog. I was on a game show. We had our live shows, both of them.
Incredible.
So, yeah, moving up in the world.
And, I mean, I turned 30.
And I turned 29.
Already a burden to our parents. No money, no prospects.
Yeah. So we're elderly now.
Yeah, we were discussing that. We are definitely old.
Yeah.
Not okay. If you are older than us.
You're not old.
You're not old.
We're older than Florence Pugh. That's the problem.
I don't want anybody to think we actually think we're old. It's just that, like,
we're not Gen Z.
We're not Gen Z. And, like, I don't know the trends anymore. It's weird. I think it's that both of us hit the stage of life where we're no longer in the zeitgeist anymore. Like, yeah. We're not the age group catered to anymore.
But listen, for our listeners, we are the zeitgeist.
Yes. Guys, are we the moment?
KS and Chris Words asks, what career did we want when we were 10?
This is hilarious because we definitely have the same answer.
I don't know.
Oh, I wanted to be an actor.
I wanted to be a screenwriter.
Oh, okay. So we both wanted to be in the industry.
I wanted to be a screenwriter because I wanted to make movies for myself to star in with Zac Efron. And then that's when I was like, oh, maybe I should study acting.
For Zac Efron?
Yeah. But also, I was interested in being an astronaut. And I still kind of am. Like, do I consider going back to school and trying to become an astronaut? Yes.
My career like that is novelist. Like, I picture like a career where like I could be a novelist and like write all day and sit in a garden and drink tea. But when I was 10 and, you know, my like first love was theater. And I loved to sing. I loved singing. I don't get to do it enough anymore. And it's kind of a bummer. Mm. Hence the return to music.
Yes. Yes. And I will also say that when I was 10, it wasn't just screenwriting. I did like writing in general. And like there are a lot of like little notebooks with stories in them and stuff. And that is still my dream, to be a novelist sitting in a garden and sipping tea. But it's on the water.
One day you and I will write a novel together. And I have a very clear picture of it in my mind.
Oh, we've discussed this.
Yes. To come another day.
Yes.
L. Richot asks, what are your wildest dreams / ambitions as content creators? Interesting.
I love this because, yes, we are content creators. However, I never think of myself as a content creator because that's like, it's not my main
source of income.
Source of income, yeah. So I think my wildest dream and ambition would be for it to be my main source of income.
Yeah. Honestly, like for me, my wildest ambitions have kind of come true. Like, I like being able to talk about something I love and perform for people I love, you know, doing work people enjoy. and being part of a community that, like, you know, is really positive and fun and happy to be hearing about something we all care about. So I never really dreamed of being a content creator. And this is something Molly and I came up with, you know, because we both were like, we need to do something creative together. We happen to be a really good fit for this. And so it just feels really great to be able to talk about Jane Austen. It's just so fun.
That was really beautiful. I should clarify that when I say I want it to be my main source of income, I would like to write little books and make little podcasts and, like, do my creative ambitions as my main source of income rather than having a job in admin.
Hell yeah.
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 But not, like, specifically podcasting, but just, like, all creative pursuits.
Yeah. No, like your own business of Molly Burdick.
Yes. The Molly Burdick universe.
Yeah. Your own world of Molly.
Yes. Pasta Thursdays asks, what is our favorite thing about our Pod and Prejudice journey so far?
Other than what I gushed about, it's kind of beautiful. I get to do this with my friend.
Yeah, it is. It's really nice that, like, it's given us a reason to continue hanging out. Not that we wouldn't have anyway, but, like, it's given us something new to bond over. And I really love the community. I really love seeing. My favorite thing that has happened so far is at our live show, a bunch of people came by themselves and sat at tables together and made friends with each other. And I thought that was beautiful.
Yeah, I think it's a tie between, you know, the getting to work with our friend, each of us, and having the best fans ever.
Yeah.
So,
which kind of ties into the final question that we have. Kat Lars asks what our favorite moments from the podcast are so far and what future things we're excited for.
I think my favorite moments are, I mean, finishing the books with you is so fun when we get to that final end and you get to see how the story that you've been following pieced together. But our live show is, like, a pretty clear moment of joy, I think. Our first
Absolutely.
Live show, like, realizing that people were excited to hear us talk.
Yeah, I think both live shows, for different reasons, were two of the best days of my life. The first one, because, yeah, it was like, oh my God, people actually wanted to come to this and see us talk. And we put a lot of thought into that, like, program and, like, the slideshow and Wishbone, and I just, like, loved how it all came together, and I think that people really enjoyed it and it made me feel really good. And then the second live show, because I was like, oh my gosh, like, everyone already came to the first live show, they're not gonna want to come to a second live show. And then they did, and I was like, whoa. And also to do a show at the Rip Bodice was just a dream. So it was a match made in heaven and one of my favorite moments. And I'm just excited to get back to reading.
Yeah, book. I love our guests, but every time we go back to a book, it's so fun to, like, dive in with you again. Listeners, that concludes a lot of questions from
so
you guys. Thank you so much for asking. This concludes season 3 of Pod and Prejudice more officially. We have a little break coming up. We're going to be releasing a little bonus content to you guys over the next few weeks or so, but I got to read Persuasion.
And I'm going on vacation.
And Molly's going on vacation that she won on TV.
Yes.
So we just are going to take a little break. Not a long one, I promise. We're going to be back this spring with season 4.
Yes, and we'll post a schedule so that you know what to expect and when we're going to release season 4.
So in the meantime, just stay proper and pick up a copy of Persuasion.
Yeah, get ready.
Love you guys.
We love you. Yay! Pod and Prejudice is edited by Molly Burdick and audio produced by Graham Cook. Our show art is designed by Torrance Brown. Our show is transcribed by SpeechDocs Podcast Transcription. For transcripts and to learn more about our team, check out our website at podandprejudice.com. To keep up with the show, you can follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Pod and Prejudice. If you love what you hear, check out our Patreon at patreon.com/podandprejudice to see how you can support us, or just drop us a rating and a review wherever you listen to podcasts. Thanks for listening.